All righty, welcome once again to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number, as always, is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag GiantsChat. Again, it is your combo of Paulie Dotz and yours truly, Russ Salzberg. And, you know, another day of preparation, getting ready to go fly out for a Christmas Eve showdown with the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, and minus Adrian Peterson, by the way, because he's on injured reserve now. And I'll be honest with you, I'm disappointed because I have great respect for him throughout his career, and I was kind of hoping I'd get a chance to see him play.
Everybody likes to. I mean, it was, seriously, you know what? The competitive nature of – I've learned this over the years from dealing with athletes in every sport. The real athlete wants to go up against the best. They want to beat you when you have your guns loaded. That's what they want. And well,
I just wanted to see him.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of guns loaded, the Giants are lacking a fair number of guns. And
did you see this? Did you see this injury list?
Go ahead. That's why it was. That was the
you were leading
segue.
Into
I was
it.
Leading
yeah,
into
see,
it.
I wasn't catching on that one quite too well.
Still not.
Burhey hamstring, Collins ankle, Dixon heel and hamstring, Ellison groin and finger, Goodson ankle, Jones ankle, King concussion, JPP finger, Rudolph hamstring, Darian Thompson knee. Who's left?
You might suit up.
Really? Who is left?
It's been that kind of season. It really has. The one good bit of news is one of the guys on that list for the second year in a row, Pro Bowl.
Yes, Landon Robert Collins. And, you know, he was really very animate about playing last week against Philadelphia. Despite an aggravation of a badly sprained ankle, he played about a quarter and a third into the second quarter before he came out of the game,
right.
Russ. They just couldn't go anymore. I mean, it was just, no. All week, Spags was saying, we're going to protect him from himself. You know, we're probably not going to do it. We're going to go medical on this. It really didn't sound like he was going to play because they're really worried about the player.
No,
and somehow he forced his way onto the field, but after a quarter or so, he had to come off. Collins said last week, the only way I'm coming out of a game is if something's broken, because that's his mentality.
Well, but you know, that's the warrior mentality, but and I think Spags and the medical staff looked at it and said, it's okay to let him go. Let's see how he is. I think if they were really worrying about further damage, they wouldn't have allowed that to happen.
No, the doctors would have shut him down.
But having said that, you know, you use the statement, they got to protect him from himself. That's when a football coach or any kind of coach or staff in any sport, well, obviously we're talking football, you have to have that mentality of a real top-notch corner man in boxing. You have to protect the fighter from himself.
Yes.
You know, the greatest example ever, maybe ever. Eddie Futch in the history of boxing.
We are so old, aren't we, Russ?
No. You know, the Thriller in Manila. I mean, you know, the war, one of the greatest wars of all time, you know, that fight was up for grabs, and Eddie Futch would not let get to the 14th round.
Would not let Smoke and Joe come out. I still think, by the way, that Joe would have won that fight.
Well,
I still think so.
I tend to agree, and I remember Ali saying after the fight, first of all, when it was announced, remember him falling in the corner, and they asked him how he felt. He says, it was the closest feeling to death I've ever felt.
Yeah.
But that's when a good a coach, trainer, whatever, that's when you really have – and it's the fighters, it's the warrior athletes that really have to be protected from themselves, because a lot of them don't want to come out. And you know what? The truth of the issue is, and we know about, you know, concussions and CTE and all what's going on in professional football, but in particular, the football players from yesteryear, when you think about it, they all had to be protected from themselves because that was their mentality. They were never taken out of a game. You literally had to shoot them to be taken out of a game. You know, if I can walk, I'm coming in. And Landon Collins is that kind of guy, but he did make the Pro Bowl, and I am happy for him. I am disappointed we were just talking about it because I don't want to say he got screwed, But I think Snacks deserved to be there.
Yeah, it's really hard.
I mean, he's a fourth alternate.
Which is ridiculous when you consider the fact that he leads all defensive linemen in the NFL.
Run
That's
stop.
All. Right. Not just a run stop. 66 total tackles. Leads all defensive linemen. That's defensive tackles, nose tackles, and defensive ends. That's unbelievable. And that's just if you look at the numbers, Russ. I posted on my Twitter page last night. If you want to be lazy and just look at the numbers, those tackles are for real. But if you understand the game and you watch him week in and week out, you know how tough he is.
His story, first of all, the guy plays, we can say, he plays his ass off week in and week out. I mean, when you talk about warrior types, Snacks is a warrior type. And you want to talk.
In a hard position to do it in and a thankless position.
Well, for sure, thankless. When you want to talk about great stories, I mean, you're talking about a guy from Lake Charles, Louisiana, goes, plays football at William Penn in Oskaloosa, Iowa, comes out of William Penn in Oskaloosa, Iowa, undrafted, to eventually receive a five-year, $46 million contract, and to be, as Paulie says, the standout that he is. It really is a remarkable story.
Without question. And I think, you know, when the other day Spags asked him to be one of the co-captains when they had to put Jonathan Casillas on injured reserve, you know, Spags was asked, but, you know, Snack says he doesn't want to be a leader.
It's not. He says he doesn't view himself as a leader. And for the life of me, I do not understand that, because he has a presence. And when I say he has a presence, I'm not talking about his 6'3", 340-pound frame.
Yeah.
Because that's an understatement. But I'm telling you, he has a presence about him that, to me, exudes leadership.
I couldn't agree
it
with
flows.
You.
It flows. I just... You know, and it's not like he's shy or anything like that. To me, he is a leader. So, but nonetheless, he did not get the nod. So, you move forward. But that's just another disappointment in a very disappointing Giants season.
Maybe, because he is the fourth alternate. You know what happens with the Pro Bowl. Guys always drop out.
Right.
Maybe there's a chance he could still wind up sneaking out.
But the point being, and if you know Snacks, Snacks wants to get in.
Sure he does. There's no question.
Through the front door. Snacks doesn't want to get in through the
Understood.
Back door.
But I'd be happy for him if he gets to go.
No, I would as well. And that would have to be a big back door for Snacks to get through.
Yes.
But what do you say we open up the
Please
phone
do.
Lines? 201-939-4513 is the number. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go down to Fort Myers, Florida, and check in with Mike. Mike, you're on with Russ and Paulie.
Hey, good morning. Oh, good afternoon, Jim. Oh, Russ, I do want to say something to you first and then go on over to Paul. I want to thank you for doing something, many, many weeks ago.
What's
when
that?
Someone came online and they were playing with McAdoo's name.
I remember.
And you cut that person off. I am so proud of you for doing that and so pleased. So I don't know if anybody thanked you for it, but you did the right thing, so thank you. I'm thanking you for it.
Thank you, Mike.
Very, very much from the bottom of my heart. You showed real class in doing that. Paul, weeks ago we started a conversation ever so briefly about whether or not Jerry Reese was either a tactical or a strategic manager or not, and we got cut off. I was supposed to call you back and couldn't call you back for a variety of reasons. You said a few weeks ago that you thought that the immediate goal for the Giants should be to get into the playoffs next year. I'd like to challenge you a little bit on that in a friendly discussion and say that, you know, the new general manager, I think, should come in and say the strategic goal for the Giants is to build an organization that is going to continuously repeat for the Super Bowl for the next 10 years. And then outline how you go about doing that. I think setting a short-term goal that you want to get back next year really could hinder great strategic moves. I don't know what those strategic moves would entail, but I think you guys get my drift.
Go ahead, Paul. I'll let you start.
You know, in a perfect world and in the NFL of the 70s and 80s, I would be so much on board with everything you just said. But it's not that NFL anymore. It's a different NFL. And in this NFL, you can't necessarily, unless you're the Patriots, and it's still a miracle to me as to how they do it, you cannot necessarily plan for that many years down the road.
Let me just interject one thing. It's a miracle how they do it. There's one very strategic way that they do it.
Belichick and Brady.
That's it. That you know, in particular, number 12. In particular, number 12. Carry on, my friend.
Yes, sir. So you look at the Giants' contracts. You look at the lengths, the monies they're owed, the guys and the positions that they are. The age of this team and where it the mix kind of lies, the contracts that are expiring, and certainly the Eli Manning situation, which is first and foremost on everybody's mind. And you have to understand that this team at this present time, they went into this season thinking there was a potential 2 to 3 year window max to try to make a push and a run. And so this 1 year has gone down the tubes. They have still another opportunity with the core of this group to make a run next year. And what we have known for years now in the NFL, and the Giants were not the only wild card team to do it, you can be a 9-7 team, get into the playoffs, make a run, and win the Lombardi Trophy. So Paul, if you've got a chance, you got to go for it.
Paul, let me ask you this question.
Sure.
There are other things I do want to come back with you on that. But to me, listening to some other callers that are a lot smarter than me, there are so many significant gaps in getting good players in our team that I don't think we can build it all in 1 year to take advantage of what you're talking about, the real great strength of Eli. I see too many weaknesses.
Mike, you just said something, though, and that's what I was going to interject. You just said something. Eli. When you have Eli at this juncture, and listen, you're talking to two guys who believe Eli not just have – we don't think he just has 1 year left. I think he has a couple of two, 3 years, good quality years left. You also want to take advantage of that window of opportunity. And I believe me, I'm with you. I think everybody's goal, Mike, is to build. And yet, like you say, for 10 years and to compete, that's what everybody's goal is. But any GM is going to tell you, we got to take – here's our personnel now. Here's our key personnel now. And we have to take advantage of this window. And right now, your window is talking about you have Eli. You have a guy who's arguably the most explosive wide receiver in the league, or certainly one of them, in Odell Beckham Jr. You have other compliments there. You got to take advantage of that situation. Do they need things? Without question. Without question. We saw on Sunday, the offensive line played okay. And what happened when they played okay? All of a sudden, Eli had time. It was an up-tempo situation, and look what you got. You got three touchdowns and 400-plus yards. So, Mike, I understand what you're saying, but as Paulie here says, and buddy, thank you very much for the call, but that window, you got to take advantage of a window.
Am I right? This league
yeah.
does not really allow you to be very patient. If it's there in front of you, you got to try to grab it. You can't just say we're going to push off, this and that because we want to have a long-term successful plan. It just doesn't work that way. I mean, here's the biggest problem of all, Russ. And again, it's inherent in the rules of the league. And I know why they did it, because they wanted parity, which I call mediocrity, with the salary cap and the guaranteed contracts that you have to pay your top flight stars. Well, when any one of those guys gets hurt, you are so behind the eight ball.
Well, that's
you're
one,
cooked.
That's one of the things about the league which you can't do anything about. And in particular, this year, in particular, we were talking about it. I have never seen so many injuries to key top-flight players.
I'm going to ask you, how do you think Parcells felt when Vinny Testaverde ripped out Achilles that year?
Yeah.
That was their shot. The Jets' one shot
right.
since 1969 to go to the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Testaverde rips his Achilles, and guess what? It's over. That's it. Done.
Yeah. You're right.
How is that good for the game?
Yeah, well.
So that's why you have to try to go for it, because you never know what's going to happen that will derail your next opportunity.
Let's go. Boy, in Hawaii? Yeah, we got to take this call. That's a little long distance.
Really?
Danny in Hawaii. Dan, you're on with Russ and Paulie. How you doing?
Hey, Russ, Paulie, how you doing?
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. Hey, I wanted to talk about the game this Sunday, the last Sunday's game.
Against Philadelphia.
To me, that showed you what the season could have been. And I think, I don't know Ben McAdoo. He might be a great guy and a great coach. But he missed an opportunity. I think we had the talent. Obviously, injuries happened later. But we got off to such a slow start because he utilizes offense wrong.
Well,
he had enough talent.
Well, Danny, I mean, let's be a little fair. Listen, let's not throw dirt on him. You know, Ben's gone, okay? And
yeah,
the move's been made. But let's be a little fair here. First of all, in particular, those first two games, I'm trying to just refresh my memory.
Dallas and Detroit.
Ugly. Well, it wasn't just ugly, but you talk about the offense. Where the defense, all of a sudden, who was the cornerstone, was non-existent. Okay, you had that. Then you go.
No doubt.
Then you go to games 3 and 4, Philadelphia and Tampa Bay, and you go into games 3 and 4. The Giants score 24 points in the fourth quarter and lose on a 61-yard field goal. Then they go to Tampa and they lose on a last-second field goal. That was the downward spiral right there. Who knows what would have happened if they go 2-2 after that? And let's put it this way: the next game, what was the next game
after that? Was Chargers?
Was the Chargers?
Yeah,
they looked like they were going to win their game, and then they had three guys not get hurt. Three receivers break ankles. So you understand what I'm saying, Dan?
No, I agree.
It's done. It's done. It's over with.
Dan, I'm going to give you one piece of real estate on this. And, Russ, you're going to have to bear with me. You may not agree, and that's okay. I'll give you one piece of real estate. One thing that really, really, really hindered the Giants during the first month of the season was a lack of a running game. And that was because the coach had decided that DJ Fluker was not going to start. And it was only after the injury to John Jerry and that DJ Fluker was inserted into the lineup that they started to run the ball effectively. That was a miscalculation, I think, on Ben McAdoo's part.
That's a fair statement.
Because had he started with Fluker opening day, they would have been more balanced. They would have had a running game since week one, and that might have made somewhat of a difference as they got off to that horrible slide, if they had just been able to run the ball some. But they couldn't run the ball through with Kleenex tissue those first few games of the season. And that's where I'm with you. Coach McAdoo made a very, very bad miscalculation on not playing Fluker.
But yeah, I agree.
I just think McAdoo's offensive philosophy is a great philosophy when you got Aaron Rodgers. And I think
a lot of people could say that about a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
When you have Aaron Rodgers.
I agree with you. And you can get away with a few weaknesses in your line as well.
Yeah.
Because Rodgers is going to buy himself time.
No doubt.
How's the weather there, Dan?
It's a little chilly this morning, probably about 65.
Yeah,
oh, a little chilly in Hawaii.
I feel so bad for you.
I'm not rubbing it in, I hope.
It's all right, brother. It's all cool.
Happy holidays, buddy.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you. That's a long distance call.
Little cool, 65. Yeah,
little cool on the chilly side. Yeah.
Hey, you know what? We shouldn't complain. It was 56 here yesterday.
No complaint. Hey, this weather's been great.
I know. I'm going to Arizona this weekend. It's going to be 70 on Sunday.
You have a good time.
But the game's inside.
I was just going to let you
know.
Couldn't
they open a roof just for me so I can get my tan?
Well, you'll have a nice memory there. You know what took place.
That
there.
Is true.
Yeah, you'll have a nice memory. Let's go to Philly and speak with Kevin. Kev, you're on with Russ and Paul. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing real well, guys. I love your up-tempo spirit, the people on this program, how they've maintained that throughout this season needs to at least be called out. So my compliment.
hasn't been easy, buddy. Let me tell you that.
All right. Yeah. Hey, listen, I'm with you. So listen. I'm actually a bit older than John Mara, so I've watched a lot of Giants football for many years.
Yeah,
and I want to capitalize on a comment that Paul made about, you know, 70s, 80s, and what you have to strike here and now, and not. I watched my share of rebuilding plans, my friends, over the years, and yes, the environment's different now and whatnot. But I'm totally with you. Whoever comes in has to come in with the idea that we're going to get this thing righted in a hurry. We are going to be a contender in 2018. And it can't be done with just fanciful thinking. And I say that because, if you know, I'm not one to look at statistics. I mean, I've always felt statistics are sort of for losers, you know, to justify what happened. But I will tell you this. When they talked in the booth on Fox about the fact that in the last 6 years, Eli Manning, who I think we all agree, you know, is somewhere between a very good and a franchise quarterback, depending on who you talk to, but he's a very good to excellent quarterback. Why is it that this guy in 6 years was only able to rally the team to victory six times? During that period in the fourth quarter. And I believe that a lot of that directly links to the personnel decisions and the inability to really build a team effectively through Jerry Reese and through the personnel offices. So now with Reese finally gone, thankfully, I am very, very hopeful that we are going to be able to take a look at this for what it really is and say, hey, you know, part of the reason that we've had the problems we do is because we just weren't very good. And we weren't very good because percentage-wise, the players that we were drafting and bringing in over the last six-year period have a very low percentage of still being with the team. So, I'd like your reaction to that, guys.
Well, fair comment.
Yeah, Kev, it's a very fair, very, very fair comment. The only thing I will say on that, I mean, the last 5-6 years weren't Jerry's best, if you will. And unfortunately, Jerry paid for it. He's no longer with the Giants. You know, the only thing I can say, you know, things go in streaks. Listen. Jerry Reese was a member of this organization for like 23 years, you know, Kev, and he was a vital part of the organization. Listen, if he's getting, he got the heat and he lost his job. But remember, you know, when he was working under Ernie Accorsi, he was very involved in the picks and all the stuff that made the team so good. So, yeah, he had a really good run, and as it happens in sports, the bad run usually ends up costing somebody a job, and it cost them a job. But I don't think anybody would dispute that. That listen, the Giants think that's why he's out. But I'll tell you this: I will be shocked if he doesn't get a job and get a job fast with another team. He's highly, highly respected.
Depends if he wants one.
Yeah, and or he might want to sit back.
He might want to
and look back, and you know, let me look for the right one in the right situation. I don't think he wants to just run out and grab any situation, because you know what? I'm sure he'll tell you. I haven't spoken to him. We just text, you know, after he left. I'm sure Jerry Reese would say to you, you know, he got a little spoiled working for a good organization. So that can happen. So you're not, but will you get used to that?
Sure.
From a GM, a coach.
You don't just want to go anywhere.
Or even a player. How many guys have left? How many guys, Kevin, and you know, you're a fan, you know how many guys have left the organization? Maybe I'm going off a little bit here, but how many guys have left the organization, come back a player, I want to retire a Giant. Yeah. I want to retire
a Giant. Look at Rashad Jennings just last week.
Yeah. I mean, so Kev, no argument. It's just, it is what it is, and it cost him his job. So.
Yeah, no, that's a very fair set of comments. And believe me, my thing is not about piling on.
No, I don't think it is. You know, you can hear it in the tone of your voice, right?
Yeah. Hey, one final thing, and then I'll free it up for some other folks. What responsibility do you guys think the whole strength and conditioning personnel and the program that they've instituted with the Giants, what responsibility do you think they have for just the rash of players that just don't seem to be able to get on the field to perform for us? What do you think?
It's an impossible question to answer, because when they made the change and brought Aaron Wellman in last year, they were on the good side of the injuries and made the playoffs.
I will say this.
So how could it be him?
Yeah, Kevin, I will say this. I think it's a fluke thing in answer to your question, simply because if guys were always, and it's in all sports, but if guys were, let's say, always pulling hammies or always straining quads or calves, that's a different story. Or your what's the new thing in baseball, the oblique muscle. When you got three guys going down in a football game with three broken ankles, you just had Collins with another ankle. An ankle's an ankle. It's a bone. It's a step the wrong way. It's a hit the wrong way. It's a twist the wrong way. I just think it's a fluke thing. But anyway, Kev, thank you for the call. Have yourself a great holiday. Appreciate it.
Now, there's something he mentioned, Russ, that I do want to hop on, because I had one very uninformed fan tweet that graphic to me, and it had to do with Eli, with only 6 fourth quarter comeback wins, I think, over the last 5 years. I guess Fox must have put it up during the game the other day against Philadelphia. And it gave his one loss record, which of course is under 500 during that time, only one playoff appearance, and only the handful of the fourth quarter comebacks. And the graphic really made him look bad. But I love the fact that the caller brought it up, because he saw right through it. You can't have a bunch of fourth quarter comebacks if your defense is blowing leads in the fourth quarter, okay? So that number is automatically going to be diminished, because it's the defense that was losing the leads.
Right.
That's not on him. He wasn't on the field. The defense was. The other thing is, in several of those years, the Giants' defense was just getting gassed so bad. If you're behind by 2 and 3 scores with 8 minutes to go, it's not realistic to think you're going to get a whole bunch of comebacks. So it was a graphic that really made Eli look kind of on the bad side,
well,
and it was unfair.
But
it was unfair.
Not just about Eli, but these graphics that come out are you make a graphic to spin any which way you want it to
No
spin.
Question. And that graphic just smelled of, we're going to pile on Eli here, and it just was a horrible graphic.
Any which way. All right, what do you say we head down to Turnpike to Trenton and speak with Kenny? Kenny, you're on with Russ and Paulie. How you doing?
Hey, what's up, fellas? How we doing today?
Good.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hey, I actually wanted to mention that. Yeah, the announcers were like shills for the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday. It was like, if they mentioned Eli Manning, it was going to be negative. Like that graph that they put up, they just when Eli completed a pass downfield, it was like, oh, Eli throws it 27 yards. They know, like, real soft voice. But when Foles did, they sounded excited. But that's besides the point. The reason I called today is I have to know, is there a reason why Bobby Hart gets a penalty on third down with the game on the line every time he's on the field? It seems like it's every time he's on the field, we're going to make this third and longer.
Well, it's hard to argue. Go ahead, Paulie.
It's definitely him, but if you guys pulled it up, I'm sure he's had penalties on third and goal almost every time he's down there. It feels like, as a Giants fan, that's what it feels like.
You know, he was baited into it, and it's still not an excuse because he's been in the league long enough to know not to do that. But you know, as much as and I agree with you. I'm not saying that he's excused in any way, shape, or form. But it's just funny that, you know, he gets baited into that penalty, and then at the same time, when Evan Engram gets his arm hooked in the back of the end zone on the fourth down pass play, that flag mysteriously disappears and doesn't show up. If you want to talk about penalties, it's a pet peeve of mine because I think the officiating in this league needs to be improved greatly, in a lot of ways. Hey, I think the rule book needs to be improved greatly, but that's another story for another show.
We had that conversation.
I'm sure we have.
I will tell you this. They took another catch away from Sterling Shepard. He definitely caught that ball over the middle.
Yes, sir.
It always seems to happen to Sterling Shepard in Philadelphia games. Now, can you guys tell me this, and I'll leave you with that. All right? In the Patriots game a little while ago against Houston, Cooks had a catch in the end zone that was very similar to Sterling Shepard. He took a couple of steps in the end zone like Sterling Shepard did in Philly and dropped the ball when he went out of bounds. It was a touchdown for them. It wasn't a touchdown for us. Now, the officiating, I don't know if it's the rule books. I don't know if it's the officials. I don't know if they're biased. But it seems like it always goes in the direction of certain teams. And if you look at it on a scale like that, like if you're watching Red Zone and you can see every scoring play, you notice there's a pattern. And it's actually frustrating.
Well, here's what I will tell you. And let me just give this to you before you hang up, because I don't know if you're going to be able to watch us on the computer. Bobby Hart has four penalties flagged against him this year. Three of them were false starts. Okay? One was an illegal use of the hands back in week 5. So it's not as though he has been a magnet for penalty flags. So I just want to be fair to him and at least give you the specific stats on that.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Sounds good. And have a good one, guys.
All right, take care.
All right, Kenny, thank you.
And here's the really weird one, Russ, and it doesn't excuse in any way, shape, or form the calls that are being made or not being made. But the Giants are very, very low. In fact, they are tied for second in the NFL for fewest penalties against. 78 penalties against the Giants this year. Carolina, 72. The Giants and the Titans, 78. So I will tell you this. My complaint is more about the calls that haven't been made against the opposition. Those have been my bigger gripes as I've looked at these games. Not so much bad calls that have been flagged on the Giants because, as I just told you, tied for second fewest in amounts of penalties drawn.
You know what? I don't want to make this an officiating,
it's not fair. We don't want to do that.
But the truth of the matter is, what I find that is a problem with the officiating in general, and it's always difficult to generalize, but what I find very frustrating is inconsistency. With the same call is called on one, it's not called, the very next play or two plays later, the same call was not called. You know, it's kind of like an analogy. Baseball players, they don't mind, certain umpires have high strike zones or low strike zones, or they're giving you the outside of the plate, as long as it's consistent. This way, the players know what they're dealing with. With some of this, I don't, it's like, huh? It's the same thing with, to the head. What is to the head and what is not to the head? What is a legal hit? What is not a legal hit?
But some of it is just not a matter of consistency, Russ. Some of it is just guys not using common sense. When Roger Lewis got hit in the Dallas game and he took that forearm right under the chin.
Right.
Okay? And one official immediately threw the flag and said, okay, that's a shot to the head. The other two officials disagreed. The three of them converged. And because it was, I'm guessing the way it worked out, two officials said it wasn't, and one did. They said, okay, we're going to pick up the flag. That, to me, laughs in the face of what the league has said, that we're going to promote safety. And if we're going to error, we're going to error on the side of safety, which says to me, common sense, if one official thought that that guy got hit underneath the chin to the head, that should be enough.
Right.
That should be enough. If one of your guys saw it, that should be enough to make that a penalty.
And folks, you'll certainly understand that it's not easy for Paul to let things go.
I love the game. I love the game, Ross.
I get you. I get you.
You know, I love the game. I want the game to the integrity of the game to be preserved. I want it to be pure. I want the game to be decided by the players' skills and talents on the field, not because somebody saw something differently or somebody didn't interpret something correctly. It just gets to me.
Yeah, he doesn't let things go, folks. Just get used to it. Let's stay here in Jersey now and speak.
You mean
with
Sterling Shepard's touchdown in Philadelphia, right?
Oh, that I don't let go. You're right about that.
Go ahead.
Three steps, and he's three steps. One, two and a half, goes out of bounds, bounces off something, drops the ball. It's not a catch.
They would rather have had him hold the ball all the way through and smashed into those two photographers, hurt himself and those photographers, but, oh, that's okay because he held the ball. It would have been a touchdown.
Thanks for reminding us, Paul.
Well, there you go.
Okay. That was part of the downward spiral right there.
Indeed.
That game culminated with the 61-yard field goal.
Oh.
As I was saying, staying in Jersey, let's go to Hugo. Hugo, how are you, buddy? You're on with Russ and Paulie.
Good afternoon and happy holidays, guys.
Same to you.
Hey, I want to, leverage some of Paul's film watching and his expertise to talk about one thing I've observed going back to last year, which is the Giants' inability to properly defend a go screen to wide receivers. I remember the Washington game last year where they had Washington in a third and long, and they went right to Jameson Crowder on that. You probably remember this play, Paul. And we've seen it over and over. Everyone remembers the third and Arkansas play to Robert Woods. But if you remember in the Oakland game, when Oakland had to make a play, they went to that wide receiver screen to Cordarrelle Patterson for a big play. And I want to know, what do you think is the root cause? Are the corners not forcing, or the safeties not filling?
You know,
or is
what?
It exploiting the speed at linebacker, the lack thereof?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you. It's something that I've noticed a lot in my film study, and even while I'm watching the games live, it happens so many times. I wish I could actually give you the stats or the numbers to back it up, but I don't have all my notes with me here. I will often turn to Russ or whoever's next to me or Jeff Fiegel's in the booth, and I'll say, there it is again. They beat the blitz. The Giants constantly this year have been burned when they have called a blitz. Safety blitz, corner blitz, doesn't matter. You'd be surprised how many times teams have hit those kinds of plays. And it's not just the screen or the wide receiver screen or the check down or the double move. They have been burned on the blitz, I think, more often than I can ever remember. And the problem is the Giants are not getting a great pass rush. And so Spags feels he's got to blitz more than he might otherwise feel. Remember, Spags' best defenses, even last year, when they could get there with four and did not have to risk the blitz, did not have to gamble. That's the whole point of having a formidable defensive line. But this year, as you know, the Giants are in the bottom three of the league in sacks. The pressures and hits are not nearly where they need to be. Spags has been forced to risk a lot more, gamble a lot more by coming on the blitz, and they're getting fried.
And a lot of it has to do with the poor linebacker play.
Yeah, I think we really do need to get some more speed at linebackers, guys who can go sideline to sideline and react appropriately to those kind of quick-hitting plays.
I'll tell you what, it could even be a linebacker who is awesome at rushing the passer. Because if you can get the heat, even with five, then you don't have to send six or seven. And then you still have more guys in coverage.
Yep.
So that's why I keep telling people, go ahead, trade the pick, get multiple picks, get the offensive line fixed, and get another premier pass rusher for your front seven. That's what needs to happen to fix this team.
Yeah. Hey, just shifting to the offensive line for a moment. I mean, this whole narrative that Jerry Reese didn't try to fix the offensive line, I think that's baloney, right? I mean, we did spend a lot of high-round picks on offensive line.
Paul, you go. Paul brought it up. Well, I don't know if you were listening yesterday. Paul brought it up yesterday and made the points of drafting guys free agent. Yeah, you're 100% right. You know, it's not like he didn't try. For whatever reason, they didn't work out. But it wasn't it wasn't like he didn't pay attention. When people say he didn't pay attention to the offensive line, that's bull. If you want to say it didn't work out, you want to question the picks or bad picks, okay, it's done. And he lost his job, but don't say he didn't pay attention to
it. Didn't acquire the right guys and certainly could have gone heavier in acquisitions.
Yeah.
And that's fair. But to say that he didn't do anything, that would be an erroneous statement.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for the call, Hugo. Appreciate it. Happy holidays. Let's go to the Poconos and speak with Dan. Dan, how you doing? You're on with Russ and Paul.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas. Always a pleasure to talk.
Hi.
Quick, just a comment, and then I just want to ask you a question. I know you guys don't have a crystal ball over there, but I appreciate your opinion. And just a quick comment on the bias that's always, I mean, Fox, it doesn't matter. Even when in 07 and 11 and, you know, those years where we were playing much better, we never got any respect. So it's nothing new. It's in general. Pretty much. But I just wanted to ask you, if we could just go to the Washington game, let's just say it really don't matter if we win or lose as far as what I'm getting at in Arizona. Let's say, you know, we're coming up to the Washington game, and I'm thinking, how many times does Eli Manning have to prove himself, right? I mean, I thought we'd never hear I thought it was like the offseason was going to be nice and quiet because he played so great in the Green Bay playoff game. I mean, you know, Odell drops that bomb, and, you know, that was the end of it. But my point is there, we're all on the same page as far as Eli playing, you know, for a few more years easy. But do you think there's a possibility of a GM coming in? And I know you guys touched on this, you know, with some kind of different philosophy and him saying we want to go in a different direction and they're thinking about the value of what they can get for Eli, God forbid, or something like that. But I think, and like I said, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I'm a season ticket holder, and I was kind of on the cuff, you know, whether I'm going to go to the game. But if I'm thinking, is there like the slightest little chance that this might be my last game?
No,
as a Giant?
No. Zip.
I'm going to hold you to that now.
Danny, hold me to it. Zippity doo dah. And zero. I mean, unless God forbid something catastrophic happens.
Don't even go there, Russ.
You know, I don't even want to say no. Dan, he is your quarterback. He will be.
I would be totally flabbergasted, shocked, stunned, blown away if he is not the starting quarterback.
Yes.
Game one, 2018.
Yep, Danny.
I think you're putting your opinion pretty straightforward there. I think I get the picture, what you think.
I'm Italian, man. Yeah, you're always going to know what I have to say.
I want to go to the game anyway because, you know, like some callers called up and it was just eating at us hearing the Eagle fans at the stadium and, you know, just hearing them. And I couldn't even listen to the pregame, the postgame show because you heard them yelling in the parking lot. I wanted to, you know, it was driving me crazy. I wanted to go there and kill them. I'm only kidding. But anyway.
Dan?
I sold my tickets.
Dan, you know what you need to do? Tell them the next time they're up at the stadium, they can go up to the Legacy Club and look at the four Super Bowl trophies.
Absolutely.
They might not even know what they are.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks for the go ahead, Dan.
Okay, fellas. Take care.
Thank you for the call. Happy holidays. Danny.
You didn't like that? I'm just speaking the truth.
I know. You don't hold on to things. Let's go to Chicago, to Windy City, and speak with Chris. Chris, how you doing?
I'm okay. I enjoy both of you guys very much. Chime in as first time caller.
Great.
Paul, I wanted to speak to you directly because it seems we're about the contemporary age wise and been a Giants fan for about 40 years.
Okay.
And, you've spoken to this many times, but and I've said this about the Green Bay offense where Ben McAdoo came from and that offensive philosophy. And my feeling is it's a finesse-style offense, and you have to have a certain kind of personnel for that. And the Giants had some of that personnel with the wide receivers in the beginning of the year. There was euphoria, but the offensive line was in question.
Correct.
But if you look at the film, and you watch a lot more film than I do, but I get a chance to watch a lot of the games myself, the Giants only have, a handful of plays where the offensive line is allowed to tack the defensive line, whether it's called in the huddle or at the line of scrimmage, just by what happens the first five or six games of the year. And then obviously with the wide receivers going down, you went to a more tight end offense, and you brought in running, you brought in Fluker, and you had to attack
some of the fullback and Shane Smith also.
Way.
Yeah, go ahead. You're right. Some of the fullback stuff too.
I'm sorry?
Some of the fullback stuff with Shane Smith, they worked a little bit of that in also during the second half of the season.
But there was less of that automatic set.
Yes.
You know, if you look at the penalty on Bobby Hart at the end, I mean, he has to get out so fast to cover it, and he, you know, he got deked out a little bit with the guy pressing him, you know, the clock going down and the crowd noise. I get all of that. But if you watch the number of times the offensive linemen set, and there's very little attacking, and that offense works – but it's a finesse offense. Look at Green Bay. They're 15-1. They lost to the Giants. Look at them in the postseason, cold weather. You can't throw it 50 times and set your offense. You've got to let your offensive lineman attack. So that being said, I agree with you about trading the pick. But do you emphasize trying to get young offensive linemen, or do you try and get somebody? Is there somebody out there? I heard the name Solder as the only legitimate offensive lineman that could be on.
Well, on the current list of unrestricted free agents at the end of the year, Nate Solder from the Patriots would be, to me, the guy with the best resume as an offensive tackle.
Right.
Justin Pugh would be the next best guy on that list as it stands today. So it's going to be slim pickings. If that's what your question is, it's going to be slim pickings. You're really going to have to make sure you draft extremely well. And quite frankly, I know nobody wants to hear this. Your best bet may be, again, leaving Eric Flowers at left tackle, trying to find a right tackle, okay, if you don't believe that Wheeler or Bobby Hart's the answer, and then trying to find probably, I would say, maybe a guard because you don't know if Pugh is going to be back.
Right, and Pugh's an undersized offensive lineman to begin with.
He is, but he is a good player.
Yeah, he's a good player, meaning that he can play a lot of positions. He's not going to embarrass you, but he's also physically, he doesn't have the accoutrements to overwhelm you or wow.
No, he's not going to overpower anybody, but remember the Giants had some very good offensive linemen over the years, the last 10 years, who were undersized. Richie Seibert was undersized. Sean O'Hara was an undersized center. Pugh's an undersized guard. Brett Jones is an undersized center. Chris Snee, you could argue, was not your typical mammoth elephant-sized guard. You know?
No.
I mean...
No, but Snee was arguably one of the strongest guys in the NFL.
Snee was incredibly powerful. But that again, does not necessarily equate to his size. He was stronger than his size indicated.
Have we got an update on... You mentioned Pugh. Have we got an update on his back?
We never heard anything more about the back other than he was IR'd.
Right.
And he's not going to play, but we never heard anything more about what they need to do to help him get himself correct.
And, you know, that's certainly a big question.
You got to figure that out.
What moving forward? Anything else, Chris?
One last thing. If you're going to keep Flowers at the left tackle, and he's improving, and anybody who doesn't see that is being foolish.
Absolutely.
But if you're looking at a right tackle in the draft, there are probably six or eight kids that you could get in as the right tackle, and you don't need to ask nearly as much of it. My philosophy for the offensive line is you got a power forward at left tackle, and you've got a right tackle with a rear end the size of a rhino, and you have guards that are powerful on the inside, and the center's got to be able to move. And so if you don't have those positions like that, and you do – have this, you know, at this point could be a top three pick. There will be a lineman to take, but would you take a right tackle or potentially a tackle guard, somebody who could play both with that high a pick, or would you trade?
No, you're still trading down. There's nothing, I'll be honest with you, there's nothing wrong with taking two offensive linemen in your first three rounds.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with that. Because,
yeah,
remember, the Giants are going to need help right away in 2018.
Right.
They're going to need production out of these rookies immediately. So what's wrong with taking two stud offensive linemen, guys in rounds two and three, or maybe two and three, maybe you trade down and make them one and three. But there's nothing wrong with taking two. That's my point.
Yeah. Well, I think if you're set on Flowers, you know, the right tackle can be gotten in the second and third round, and you can get real good picks for that, as well as a guard tackle, somebody who has the potential to play both. Anyway,
sure.
I enjoy the show.
Thank
Merry
you.
Christmas.
You too,
Chris. Happy holiday. All the best.
Please call again.
Thank you very much. Keep it up, guys.
All right,
thank you.
Chris. Thank you. Let me ask you a question. Would you have hesitation? And I don't, again, you can spin it any which way you want. If you drafted two young guys, would you want to put two young guys on the offensive line together?
I could do it depending upon where they're going to play and what programs they came out of.
Right. Yeah, that's very important.
Very important.
Yeah.
Because if they came out of a program that has a pro-style attack and had a really good offensive line coach.
Notre Dame?
Well, that's certainly one.
Yeah. Okay. No, know? No. That's why I'm asking you.
Because you've heard many times when they get after the draft and they'll say, okay, they're talking about guys, and they'll say, well, this guy played in a pro-style offense. He's already further along because he's nearly a plug-and-play player. That makes a difference.
Yeah. No, you're right. All right. Let's go to our buddy in Columbia, Maryland, Len. Lenny, good morning. Good afternoon. How you doing today, our friend?
Good, 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 good. Happy holidays.
You too, Len.
Great job with the show all season.
Thank you.
You know, Paul, I agree with you. You know, your assessment of Steve being as strong as he was, and I'm sure you guys remember, I think he won some national championships in powerlifting.
He was incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And now he's a toothpick if you've seen him.
It really is.
Yeah, guys, you know, go down to the local gym and find the power lifters. And,
yeah, there you go.
You know, get those guys into camp and see what they could do.
That's it.
You know, I guess a positive on Snacks, you know, if you do a little arithmetic, he's in the top, as the fourth alternate, he's in the top 25% of the defensive tackles in the conference. And when your team is ranked 32 in defense, I guess it's hard to, you know, get a lot of notoriety and so forth. But
you know what? You know what, Len? That's
a
fair point.
Those top three guys are really good. You know, it's hard to argue that they shouldn't be there. But fourth alternates, I thought that's a little low. Jeez.
Well, we all did. But you know what, yeah. Len? You bring up a fair point. 2-12, you're not getting a lot of nods. If we didn't bring that
absolutely.
Up before, you're not going to get a lot of nods
no.
in that
yeah,
situation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Pretty clear, though.
You know,
I
one
mean,
other thing, and Paul has heard me say this before, I have this idea. You make the Pro Bowl the first 8 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
You make all pro the second 8 weeks of the
yeah.
season.
We've heard that before. And, we've heard that before. And quite frankly,
yeah,
Len,
yeah.
I hope Snacks yeah. – last year when Snacks did get snubbed for the Pro Bowl but then made all pro – that
yeah.
was something that he took great pride
yes,
in, and
did.
I hope he
yes.
gets to do that again this year. And as
yeah.
far as the trip to the Pro Bowl itself, remember, you've got an Eagle and you got a Ram.
Yeah.
And one of those
yeah.
teams might be going to the Super Bowl, so that would
oh,
eliminate
yeah.
that
yeah.
would eliminate one of those guys right off the bat.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
McCoy's
yeah,
banged up
Listen,
with the Buccaneers.
Just
he's
talking
hurt.
About Hart, I know. You know, Bobby Hart said, you know, it was quite noisy down there. And Paul, I know you were probably close at the end. My seats are down in that end, and yeah, it was loud.
Oh yeah,
and,
I was right
and,
on the goal
and,
line.
Yeah, that's about as loud as I ever remember a. You know, a rival crowd in that stadium. I mean, it was really loud at that point. Of course, it was a key point in the game too. But, you know, and to hear them chanting, you know, Russ, you'll appreciate this, and I know Paul will too. You and I and, you know, the three of us, we remember when that chant was invented in the late 50s and the early 60s. We invented it.
Yeah.
Yes, the old Yankee Stadium, the chants of defense.
We invented that chant.
That's correct.
Oh, my goodness.
That
and now
correct.
We got these guys coming back. And
with
yeah,
Sam
God,
Huff,
that was
yeah.
that was kind of disappointing. But, you know, and a little frustrating to me because I know where those people got those tickets. They didn't walk up to the box office at 12:30 and buy a ticket to
no.
this game.
No. Nope.
Who'd they get them from, Paul?
Some disgruntled Giants fans earlier in the season who decided that they were going to bail.
There you go. There
yeah.
you go. That, to me, is very disappointing.
Well, but you know what, Len? Like I said, in fairness, That was a kind of a perfect storm situation.
It was.
Yes, it was.
Have an 11-2 team against a 2-11 team, and that 11-2 team is down the turnpike.
Yeah, only 90 miles away.
Proximity had everything to do with that.
Position in the playoffs, everything. It's still a little, still a little frustrating. You figure in your own home stadium. I know it's frustrating to Mr. Mara. He's probably never going to forget that.
I don't think any owner wants to see his house have a large percentage of visiting fans. But to be honest with you, Len, I've gone on the road with the Giants. For example, Tampa Bay, that stadium has got to be like 55-60% Giants fans when they play at the Buccaneers.
I've been part of those crowds, Paul, because I travel with them too.
It happens.
I've been part of those Giants crowds in foreign cities, including Philadelphia.
Yeah, it happens. It happens.
So, yeah, I guess it's the way it is. All right, look, two games to go. Let's, we're 0-5 in the division, 0-10 in the conference. Jeez, and come on, we got to win one of these games. And, you know, what I'm hoping for, not to get too emotional about this, but, let's win a game for Spags.
Can I tell you something, Len?
Get him a game ball.
Amen for that. You know what, Len? We were talking. I don't know if you listened yesterday. Paul
yeah,
and I.
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
I heard your,
Well, when Spags walked up today, and he's very, very good. He's excellent at controlling his emotions. He's very good. But he stood up there, and I'm telling you, I could sense smoke coming out of his ears. I could sense he was restraining himself. It was a game that, listen, you had Eli playing well. You had the offensive line playing well. I mean, you had botched things, block punt, block field goal, block extra point.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I want Spags to get a win. You're damn
right. I want
right.
him to get a win.
You know what he felt like? And I could tell you because I looked in his eyes. It felt like someone had just served you the plate of pasta without the grated cheese. It's not good. It's just not good.
Just one other wish. I do not want to go 0-6 in the division. I mean, that's I don't think we've ever – gone an offer in the division in the history of the Giants. You'd have to I can't ever remember that.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look at
one.
That.
I don't want to see him go 0-6.
No.
All right, hey, guys, have a great holiday.
You
and,
too, Len.
We'll talk next week maybe, and, let's go Giants. Let's win the game here.
Be well, Lenny. Happy holidays to you and your family, my friend. Take care. Good caller, Lenny.
Always.
I kind of feel that way. The guys played hard for Spags last week. I'd like them to get a win. I really, really would.
And I think, I don't know if Len intentionally meant to say it or was just trying to, put a feel-good feeling out there for Spags, but I want him to get a game ball.
I agree with you.
Not just win the game, but I want to see Eli give him a game ball, and I want him to be able to use that as a memento of how much – this group of guys played for him, respected him, gave everything they had for him. Because whether or not he's here or not next year, in whatever capacity that may or may not be, he has handled himself with such professionalism, such class. You can't help but root for him.
Well,
and he should have a feel-good moment out of this. He should.
Look, if you get to know Spags, anybody who knows Spags, he's one of those people that there's nothing bad to say about the guy. There's nothing. Listen, as far as I'm concerned, I'm on record. I want him back. Quite frankly, I'm sure callers out there, and it's a story for another day. If he's the head coach of the Giants next year, you'd have no problem coming from me. I wouldn't mind that at all. If he was back as defensive coordinator, I wouldn't mind that. But I'm telling you, this team, as we were talking, will compete next year. And no one's coming in to go divide to be 8-8 coming off a 2 or whatever record it's going to wind up being. Maybe it's going to be 4-12. We will see. Either way, it's not going to be good. But I would have no problems with Steve Spagnuolo back as your head coach of your New York Giants.
For those of you who don't know him, just think about this. Think about the guy who, if you could create him, would be your favorite next-door neighbor. Now that's back.
That would be you. But on that note, we have to say goodbye. That's a
Thanks,
wrap.
Russ.
That's a wrap on Big Blue Kickoff. But and I would make sure I bring the grated cheese with the thing.
You have
right?
to, okay. or I'd have to do something nasty
right.
to your lawn.
For Paulie Dotz, I'm Russ Salzberg. Thanks for being part of Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. We'll see you next time.